Honey, the power's out.
Flashlight's dead. Can't find batteries.
Hey, neighbors. Want to borrow my Star Patrol spotlight?
That flashlight lights up the whole house.
Watch. The Star Patrol can light up the whole neighborhood. It can illuminate up to a half mile away.
A half mile? That's insanely bright.
And the turbo boost increases brightness up to 100%.
Whoa, now that's insanely bright.
With 10 illumination modes, the Star Patrol is a flashlight, spotlight, floodlight, emergency light, and more. And with an ultra-fast USB power bank, you can even charge your phone with it. Plus, the Star Patrol is fully rechargeable and backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee.
So how do I get one of these Star Patrols?
Go to GetStarPatrol.com and you'll get it with free turbo boost, free shipping, and a money-back guarantee. Again, that's GetStarPatrol.com. GetStarPatrol.com.
Hi, I'm Shauna Meyerson with the Yoga of War podcast, here today with Rabbi Lior Sinai. If you appreciate and find value in these important discussions, please consider supporting the show so I can continue to bring you such amazing and esteemed guests. Details are pinned in the comments below. So, Am Yisrael Chai. You hear this everywhere. The nation of Israel lives. It's become an anthem, a greeting, a prayer, an affirmation, a war call. And it is. It's all of that and none of that all at once. As Rabbi Lior Sinai says, Am Yisrael Chai is not a slogan. It's a way of life. So, what does Am Yisrael Chai really mean? What is it about these three words that has stirred the soul of a nation? Well, the answer's in the question. Am Yisrael is an entire nation with just one soul, a nation that beats and bleeds with one heart. But have we forgotten? I mean, what will it take to remind the Jews of Israel and the diaspora that, in fact, we are all one? And imagine the nation that will rise again when we finally do. Rabbi Lior Sinai is a global speaker, education diplomacy thought leader, and a longtime campaign executive. Sinai is principal of Sinai Strategies, a consulting agency motivating influential actors to collaborate towards advancing global Israel relationships. In 2009, Sinai received his rabbinic ordination and master's degree and has been active in advancing the Jewish leadership and educational experiences following October 7, 2023. Sinai is a member of the Israeli Emirati Forum, serves on the Jewish Agency for Israel's Board of Governors, and on the boards of Kol Yisrael, a global Zionist movement, and Achalta, a nonpartisan thing. Achalta, sorry. The emphasis is on the Al, a nonpartisan think tank, advancing social cohesion and national resilience in Israel. Originally from New York, Sinai made Aliyah with his family in 2011, and we're so happy to have him joining us today. Thank you so much, Rabbi Sinai. It's so wonderful to have you.
It's a huge pleasure, and thank you for having me.
After I heard you speaking at, by all coincidence, Sinai Temple, my temple here in Los Angeles, I knew immediately, I'm like, I have to get this guy on the show, because what you said was so uplifting and so heartwarming, and that is what I think we all need more of in the world today. So in last week's episode with former IDF spokesperson Jonathan Conricus, he talked about the importance of the Jewish people understanding what we are fighting for instead of just what we're fighting against. So I'd like to start off with the question, in your opinion, what are we fighting for?
That's a great question and a great lead in. We, Am Yisrael, the Jewish people, also another, you know, we have many terms that follow that sort of title and description, are also known as Am HaNetzach, the eternal people. And that really has a lot to do with our mission in this world, is to make the world a better place. We believe that we have the value system, our contributions to humanity. I joke about, the number one bestseller in human history is the Bible. You'll go to any motel or hotel and open the drawer, and you'll see there's a copy there. But with that, of course, is everything else that we have been actively contributing to society, to humanity. We have a mission that we have taken on as partners with, if you want to call it God, with Elohim, with the universe. We really believe in our essence as a people, in our literature, in our value system, that we are here, that our mission is much larger than just us. So that's just sort of on a grand, if you will, scale. But there is something also to do with a passion for life that we have as a people. And I sometimes ask myself, and I scratch my head, that I think despite history, despite what it is that the Jewish people, Am Yisrael, have been through, whether it's here in the land, whether it's through 2,000 years of exile, there is some formula that exists that has empowered us, enabled us to navigate the travails, the challenges that we face throughout history. And we know enough of our history and our most recent history and 77 years ago and what happened in Europe and Spanish Inquisition and so on and so forth, to really understand that our passion for life, because we choose life, in the words of Shakespeare, to be or not to be, we choose to be. So we strive for life, we strive for community, we love giving back. I was just listening to another podcast talking about charity and tzedakah. And the proportionality of the Jewish people's giving, if you will, percentage-wise. So there is something about our people, if it's in our DNA, if it's in our muscle memory, if it's in our desire to love and choose life, I think that drives us forward and drives us to overcome challenges that we might be confronted with.
So it's interesting, and I feel like what I'm about to say is going to, in a way, mitigate. So not intentionally, but I'm trying to figure out how to say this. It almost says that what I'm hearing almost is that what we're fighting for is what we've always fought for, which is survival. Now, I say it's mitigating because to the Jewish people, survival is not just survival, right? It's thrival. I don't know. Like what the word is. But in what I'm hearing is, our story, which is there, most obviously since 10/7, there have been so many people who have risen up to destroy us, but you say we're looking for the formula. Is that what we're fighting for? Is how to continue to survive as Am Yisrael, as the state of Israel, as the people of Israel, does it go beyond that?
Well, I think that, if you look back, and we have a rich and long history. In terms of the formula, I think we know what the formula is, and I've talked about this in the past, and I shared it as well on that Shabbat at Sinai Temple, and it's ingrained in our name, Israel, right? Where the name of Israel comes from. Israel was our patriarch Jacob, and his name and transformation took place following that wrestling, that struggling with a person. In the Bible, it says an ish, which means a person, but we, of course, we like to struggle with the text and make meaning of it. So call it, God or the universe's presence on earth. So we struggle and we ask tough questions. And we ask tough questions, and through that struggle, through that question and answer, through that debate, through that dialogue, we extract meaning and purpose. And to a certain extent, whether it is the peoples of the world throughout history, the empires that have risen and fallen, the countries we have been welcomed to dwell in for X number of years here and there throughout our history, have looked to us for some reason or another to be something. Whether it's the chosen people or whether it's the people to blame for the ills of societies and so on and so forth. And to a certain extent, whether it's divine, or whether it's humanity that has placed this burden, if you will, or some might call it responsibility, to be the canary in the mine, but also to ring the bell and say, hey, there's some fixing that needs to take place in our societies. So on the one hand, there's the particular, if you will, Jewish value of Jewish community, of what has become Jewish history and holidays, right? Holidays have developed throughout history, periods of time, the Jewish calendar. These are the things that bring us meaning and purpose in a world that is chaos. Religion in general comes to bring order out of chaos, because why do bad things happen to good people? We try to make sense of things. And so to a certain extent, Judaism, if you will, or Am Yisrael has been around for quite some time, and we've really amassed traditions and holidays and literature and philosophy and theology and you name it, we've been there. And so that's on a particular level, but we also have what, you know, it is the universal relationship we have with global citizenship, with the world. So there's the particular and there's the universal. Now, the challenges that we sometimes have, I think, as a people, and we see this throughout history, and maybe American Jewry is going through that right now, is that we strive so badly. We want to be accepted universally. We just want to be like everyone else. We want to live. We want to thrive. We want to do whatever else anyone else is doing. We don't want to be have fingers pointed at us. And so that's the universal versus the particular struggle. And I think that, you know, having those two perspectives as Jews, we often have had to. We've had to always manage and mitigate our presence in other countries, in other communities. You know, I remember, you know, people say, you know, keep your head down, don't wear your kippah, don't, you know, don't flaunt your Judaism or whatever it is, you know, kind of mend it. And that's translated into people, you know, changing their names, Americanizing their names versus Jewish names, and so on and so forth. So there are these dual tracks that we exist in. It's, you know, the particular Jewish and then the universal. And I think that's where we try to find where our contribution is, where we can be active participants in society.
Yeah. Hopefully we are moving. We seem to be moving in sort of a dichotomous route, wherein on one end, we do have, and I'm just taking a little tiny piece out of what you said, the people who are afraid to be Jewish, who are taking their mezuzot, who are wearing hats instead of kippahs, who won't wear their tzitzit, their magen David, et cetera, et cetera. But on the other hand, there's this very bold section of people who are really going in the opposite direction, who, I mean, look at Michael Rappaport. Okay, let's take him as like the biggest example, who's rapping to fill in and wearing, you know, like, a, you know, people are wearing like rapper sized Jewish stars, and even the dog tag. Like, it was funny when I ordered it, I'm like, wow, that's big. And then I'm like, wow, that's big, right? Like the whole world is going to see this. It's not like this tiny thing. It's something that everyone who sees it, either they know it and there's a wink and a nod, or they're like, what is that? Right? Like, so I think that we need to, I think it's scary and sad that people feel like they can't put their Judaism on display in the world today. I think that needs to be a goal. But I do think that Judaism is, in another world, being put on display. I'm curious, in Israel, how do you feel? Do you feel, obviously people aren't afraid to be Jewish in Israel, but do you feel that people in general are leaning more towards more Jewish? I mean, we're hearing this from the hostages, of course, and a lot of soldiers, but I'm talking about the general populace. Or was there some loss of faith when, I hate to say it, God allowed what happened to happen on 10/7?
Sure. It's interesting because, I mean, if I can take a parallel example to the Shoah, the Holocaust, and you have many stories of people who perhaps were raised as religious Jews in Eastern Europe and lost God, if you will, in the Holocaust, and say, you know, God wasn't there. And then there are those who actually found comfort in their faith in God in the most difficult of times. And so, yes, you know, you're hearing about hostages that have come out who have found strength in their faith. And I go back to what I said earlier in terms of chaos, right? That's chaos. October 7th is chaos. It's dark and evil that is penetrating light and all that is good and the choice to live. So that's chaos. And so so how can you fight off that chaos other than physically fighting chaos? It's through your belief. It's through your faith. You know, the word in Hebrew, faith, is emunah. It's faith. And someone's faith is their truth. You can't take it away from them. It's their truth. And it shares the same root word as emet, which is the word truth. So emunah and emet, faith and truth, goes hand in hand. So there is a source of strength that people find in believing in something that's much greater than them, and connecting to it. But I want to, if you don't mind, just touch on one thing that you mentioned, which is I think also worthy to mention, is the notion of October 6th versus October 8th Jews. And you talked about what's going on in the States, and I'll also mention what's happening in Israel. And you mentioned Michael Rappaport and others, of course. There, I believe we're witnessing a tremendous Jewish renaissance. I mean, given the fears and the anxieties that people might have, whether it's in the United States with the tidal wave of Jew hatred and what is happening on college campuses, or in New York City subways for that matter. And nonetheless, people have woken up. October 8th has seen a tremendous, tremendous rise in Jews who are waking up, who are seeking to reconnect with their own identity, who want to come to Israel to visit. I know many, many Jews who I didn't even know were Jewish, who I'm friends with on Facebook or social media. I say, yeah, I'm Jewish. And I didn't know. And they're like, I was in Israel for my bar mitzvah. Now I'm 50 or however old, and I'm coming back. And they've been here six, seven, 10 times since October 7th. And so on the one hand, while things can be scary and the invasion of southern Israel on October 7th and the ensuing war that took place thereafter and all the stories that have come back is horrific. But on the other hand, if you zoom out and don't lose the forest for the trees for just a moment, and you see the big picture, you can identify that there is something historic taking place. There's something very special that's happening right now that is going to be talked about for years to come. We're in it. We are experiencing it. We're navigating it. Many of us are active in perpetuating it, like yourself and your podcast, right? Getting the word out, connecting people, educating people. But it's happening. It's a very interesting time to be alive and to be Jewish.
It sure is. And let me say that, I've heard so many people talk about the same concept this week that people are no longer talking about how many times they've been to Israel, but how many times they've been to Israel since 10/7.
Correct.
And it's funny because I'm thinking that's exactly the first thing I tell people. Like, I've been there twice since 10/7, but I've been there about 25 times, right? And all of a sudden, those other 25 or 23, let's do the math, it's around whatever. Don't seem as pertinent, right? It is a totally different experience to go to Israel right now. And if I might just give a plug to the Israel Tourist Association or whatever ministry, now is such an amazing time to experience Israel because of this magic that's in the air, but also because there's still time to bear witness before everything is cleaned up. And I know there's a lot of debate, like do we keep some of it as like historical record, or do we put that behind us, right? I mean, like, obviously we just had the March of the Living. Auschwitz is still standing. They decided it was more important as a historical testament. And when I was there, when we went to visit the Carr graveyard, they were talking about, well, we don't know if we're going to keep this or not. But it seems like the most likely thing to hold, because obviously the kibbutzim have to be rebuilt.
Right. Well, look, there's so many things that you just said that I want to jump on, some of
Go
these
for it.
pieces that I want to talk about. But I do want to talk about the topic of space and creating Jewish memory, an experiential memory. And I'll give you an example. And this is something I do. I put on my educator's hat. That's also a background I have as being an educator. Every Friday, I run myself and Anat Sharbat. We run a Kabbalat Shabbat at Hasid Square. I point that way because it's literally around the corner from where I live. I'm in Tel Aviv right now.
Oh, okay.
And every Friday since that October 7th, we have been there on Friday evenings. I missed Friday when I was in LA a couple of weeks ago, so I wasn't there for that. And then there was Rosh Hashanah this past year fell on a Friday too. But every Friday we're there. And if you've been to Hasid Square, for all of your viewers out there, pre-October 7th, it was just a square that is adjacent to or belongs to the Tel Aviv Museum. It's the Tel Aviv Museum Square. It's just a space. And if you went there on October 6th or 5th or any date before then, You'd see teenagers riding their bikes, hopping off of the benches, skateboarders doing all kinds of tricks, just hanging out, old people, young people walking around. And if you go there since October 7th, it's become, some people call it ground zero. I call it a Beit Mikdash, a holy sanctuary, a space. There has been lots of investing in creating the space. So that long table that existed there with the names of the hostages, the tunnel that someone designed, the Hamas tunnel, if you will, the mock tunnel that you can walk through to get a sense of what it might have been like for a second to walk through such a tunnel. The different displays and artwork that's created there. And you're having school buses coming through. You're having buses of tourists. If you come to Israel, it was once the case that if you came to Israel, you went to the Western Wall, the Kotel in Jerusalem. Today, you come to Israel, you're going to Hasid Square. So whether it's like you had mentioned, the pile of wreckage and the cars that were found from the Nova Festival shot up and the whole vicinity, or this space here, there's something about creating environments of experientialism. And Judaism and Jewish life in Israel is saturated in experientialism. All of our holidays, all of our experiences. And through those experiences, we're meant to internalize, not just to intellectualize. It's a wisdom of the heart that we gain. And so for people who have been coming here, I want to argue that it's not just about them, being here at this moment in Israel and supporting Israel, which is fine and expected, but it's also for the Jews out there around the world who are yearning and thirsty to be connected, especially now, because not only what happened here, but what is happening there, meaning where you are and others around the world, we need to come up for air. Everyone's got to come up for. So you're coming to home base. This is ground zero. This is home base. This is home.
It's absolutely true. It does. It feels, I always say that whenever I leave, going down the ramp back to leave Israel, I just feel my soul being sucked out of me. And when you land in Israel, you know you're home. You just know it. But I certainly agree. And I do hope that anybody and everybody, Jews and non-Jews who have not been to Israel, absolutely, this is the time to experience it. And just on a side note, because one of the times I was there was solely just to volunteer for a week, the amount of appreciation, I just couldn't believe it. That, I mean, just every single person was just so appreciative. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like what you've been through, like the Jews of the diaspora, and it seems like everybody I know has been there to volunteer, but like nobody took it for granted. Everybody was like so appreciative, and I hope that the Israeli Jews do not feel isolated from the diaspora who is praying for them and donating for them and demonstrating for them and making podcasts for them and posting for them. And
I have to say, the period of time between, October 6th to October 8th, what happened on October 7th, of course, was the emotional experience for anyone living here in Israel, and I would argue for Jews around the world, was just this swinging pendulum of shock, awe, isolationism, to anger, to grief, to, maybe the world will show us some empathy, to realizing, wait, the world isn't showing us any empathy, to feeling isolated, to saying, wait, hold on, is Jewish blood cheap? No one cares. It's enough that we're surrounded by, enemies, whether it's states or whether it's, terror groups or whoever it is that are sitting on our borders, to then look overseas to the free world. I'm talking the Western world, Europe and the United States, and to see what was going on. We felt, I'll tell you, very, very alone. Not sure what was going to be. And it's a horrific experience. It's something that I can only identify through the stories I've heard and learned about the Shoah, about the Holocaust, and from my own personal experiences with my grandparents who are survivors from Eastern Europe, from the Shoah, from the Holocaust, of that sense of the world turning its back on you. So at this point in time, Israelis, number one, are emotionally fatigued, and we're and our existence is in a state of not PTSD, but TSD. We're still in a traumatic stress disorder stand. We're still, I was in LA a couple of weeks ago. I heard an ambulance drive by and I paused for a second and said, "Oh, wait, I'm in Los Angeles. Of course, we're not under attack. It's just an ambulance." So, like, we're all living in this, from my youngest daughter, who's 12, to, the old couple that lives across the street. And I mean, all of Israel. But I'll tell you one thing is certain. Number one is that, and this is what gives me hope, my anchor of hope is in our people. It's not in our leadership. It's not in our government. It's not in politics. I refuse to watch the news or listen to politics. It's in the people I am meeting at Hasid Square, religious, secular, right. We're more unified than anyone can ever imagine. It's the people I'm meeting, like yourself and others, when I'm traveling to communities around the world. We're inspired by you. You empower us. So yes, thank you. And for everyone out there, we know we're not alone. We know we're not alone, and we're on the right side of history.
Absolutely. So what moved me so much about your the discussion that you had with Rabbi Sherman was just how positive you are. It just utterly, it just your enthusiasm and the inspiration is just very something that we all need right now. So I do want to get into some of your specifics and laying the groundwork. Before we dive into the actual slogans that you discuss, specifically, how do you define Yisrael? Who is it?
So we are all part of the people of Israel. When I say Am Yisrael or Am Yisrael Chai, I'm not just talking about citizens who live here. I'm talking about the global. Now, we call them the Jewish people. We call ourselves the Jewish people, really, because historically we're derived from the tribe of Judah. That's where the name comes from. And when we were exiled to give us a secondary status or derogatory name, if you will, they called us Jews. But really, we're all Israelis. I wrote an article a while back about imagine if we were all Israeli, meaning you living in Los Angeles as opposed to being an American Jew, you're American Israeli. Now, I say that, and I use that relationship based on my experience. I was born and raised in New York, right? And I lived in a neighborhood. I had my African American friend. I had my Irish American friend. I had my Italian American friend. I had my Russian American, my Chinese American, you name it, Spanish American. Most of these friends, by the way,
Had
maybe their
never been.
grandparents came from them. They've never even set foot in these countries.
Right.
But boy, they were proud Italian Americans. They had names that were Italian American. They never even went to Italy, but they were Italian Americans. And so I thought to myself, and this is me thinking, and this is how I think, why are you a Jewish American? Because after all, being a member of Am Yisrael, it's not just a religion. We know that, right? There is a
Right.
land. We are indigenous to this land. There is a language. The language we speak is the language our ancestors have been speaking for thousands of years. The God we worship is the same God as did, Aaron, the priest Aaron, Moses' brother. The biblical archaeology that we uncover here is, just all relates to this essence of Israel. We are all from Israel. And words have power, right? We say these blessings in the morning. Baruch she'amar ve'hayah ha'olam. Blessed is he who spoke and created the
World.
world, right? God says, "Let there be light," and there was light. Now, I wasn't there, so right, I don't know if that's how it happened, but putting the faith component out, intellectually speaking, I get it. Words have power, right? I can go to my son, my daughter, my friend, to you, and say, "Wow, you were amazing today. I'm so impressed. You were great. I'm so happy you did so well at school." That's nice. Like that lifts you up to the heavens. You feel great. Versus, "You embarrass me. You are horrific. You're an embarrassment. I can't believe how you act." That can bring someone all the way down. Words have power, and so do labels. And so when I think about Am Yisrael, I think about all of us. Global Israel. So why aren't you called an American Israeli? It has to do with history or exile or choices made by your ancestors that you happen to be in Los Angeles, but you were originally from here, right? And so I believe that when I say Am Israel, I'm talking about the global people of Israel.
I
You
love it.
have Jews from the tribe of Judah. You have, people from the tribe of Menashe, who are today's Jews who come from India. You have Ethiopian Jewry. You have all these different sort of tribes and sects that are now coming up, over the last few years. We're finding, Jewish people in Uganda and all over, right, everywhere. We're all Am Yisrael. We are all from the people of Israel. And when we internalize and understand what that means as a people, as a nation, but also the essence, and I said this before, of Israel. The word Israel. The word Israel in Hebrew means Kisarita im Elohim v'im Anashim v'tocha. The word Israel is for you have wrestled with God and humanity and have succeeded. This is our theological relationship with God and the universe. This is our relationship with humanity. It's when Abraham Joshua Heschel says in Thelma, I prayed with my feet, when he stands there with the Torah scroll and Dr. Martin Luther King, of all of them of blessed memories, because we fought for the civil rights of others. Even most recently, Me Too and Black Lives Matters. You'll find all of my rabbinic colleagues on the front line. The Jews, we're fighting for the rights of others because we wrestle with God and with humanity. Rabbi Milubavitch of blessed memory, the former leader of the Chabad movement, said the Jewish people are like the salmon fish. Am Yisrael is like the salmon fish. Why? How does the salmon fish swim?
Upstream.
Upstream, and even better, I would say, against the current.
Yeah.
We don't function like everyone else. We just don't. Look throughout history. We raise the alarm bells. This isn't cool. A population that is less than half of 1% of the global population, 0.02% of the world's population, 8 billion people, 0.02% of one, like less than half of 1%. And we're out there fighting for the rights of others. Doing all we can. Tikkun Olam has become like the flag that, many, many of our brothers and sisters carry out there, healing the world, making it a better place. We're going to Haiti to dig wells, and we're bringing solar panels to Africa so they have electricity. Wow.
Yeah.
What a story. Like, what
Right.
a people. And this is Am Yisrael.
It absolutely is. It's a very beautiful depiction, in fact. I would also say that another sort of perfect depiction of Am Yisrael, like as you said, it's not just the people who physically live in the land of Israel, but it can be found right on the dog tag, right? It now most people haven't taken the time to read the Hebrew or think about it, including people in Israel, because it says Halev Shelanu Shivui Ba'aza, Halev, that's singular, not Levavot. Right? Like the obvious, which would be hearts. Sorry, a lot of people listening don't necessarily speak Hebrew. So the thought that, we're talking about one beating heart, not whatever, 18 million around the world or 16 million. And I think that that's like another thing that makes this tag so beautiful. But it is disconcerting, however, to see so much rife and division right now, both in Israel and in the diaspora between Jews and between whether it's political, whether it's moral, social, whatever it is, whatever reason that we have these rifts, it's very disturbing. And I'm wondering, like, if you could put very succinctly, like, why does every Jew, regardless of location, denomination, level of observance, politics, but sexual orientation, why do we all need to stand together with one heart?
Great question, and I'm happy you asked. We have a shared destiny that transcends what we see immediately before our very eyes. To be a member of the tribes of Israel, to be a member of Am Yisrael, has nothing to do with individual autonomy, which goes against Western philosophy and ways of life. You know, if one of the wonderful things I think about the United States and the creation of that idea, which became this country, the United States, and the arrival of immigrants of all walks of life and backgrounds to the United States, was that you can be who you want to be, you can do what you want to do, as long as you follow the rule of law, you don't hurt anyone else, right? And I call it individual autonomy, which is a beautiful thing. I think of the American dream when I was growing up. It might not be the case today, but it was to have a big house and a white picket fence. If you know that language,
Yes.
why do I need a fence, right? And so, you know, and that's a beautiful idea is, you know, you can go and buy yourself a plot of land in the middle of who knows where in Kentucky or out there. But to be a member of Am Yisrael has nothing to do with individual autonomy. It has everything to do with togetherness, with being a part of something that is much larger than you. It has everything to do with being a part of community on a practical level. You need a minyan if you need to say Kaddish over someone that's passed away in your life. Your holidays can't be celebrated if you're sitting home alone. They're celebrated with a community, whether it's at your shul, your synagogue, your temple, your JCC, wherever you might be, your community, your neighborhood. So there's something about being a member of Am Yisrael that requires more than just having one, you know, being on your own. You can't be a Jew when you're on your own. You got to be a part of community. And then once you start entering that sphere of community, of nationhood, of peoplehood, right? This term Jewish peoplehood, which has gained a lot of use over the last decade or two in the United States, right? The federations around the United States using the term Jewish peoplehood to try to remind the Jews that they're part of a people, that's part of something much larger. Once you get into that understanding and then you're learning text, which is growing. Today, people are seeking to enhance their Jewish literacy. They want to get back to the sources. They want to understand who they are as Jews and why they are and what does it mean to be a part of this thing. Then you start understanding things in a very different way. And the lens through which you see your own life and the world around you and the lives of people that mean something to you and the people that you care about and this place called the land of Israel or the state of Israel and also on and so forth, you start seeing things differently, right? Sometimes it's about the lens through you know where you see things and how you understand and comprehend things. So that just, you know, empowers the experience of being part of something that's much greater than you, living a purpose-driven life.
Wow, I have to say, so I'm 53 years old. I went to Lubavitch School as a kid. I mean, I had like the full-on education. This is the first time that I've heard that connection between the minyan and the concept of we don't even pray alone. We need 10, well, man, we'll put that aside for now. It to we can't exist alone. And I love that concept. Thank you for bringing that up. So let's get to the big question. So now that we've defined Am Yisrael, what does Am Yisrael Chai mean to you?
So just like take a step back before we take two steps forward. So you know so I've been like for years now, I've been involved in the Jewish world and working, you know, bridging global Jewish communities and Israel and vice versa, just by the sheer position that I'm in as an American, now Israeli, and I speak both languages. I say I speak American and I speak Hebrew, Israeli, because I not only speak the language, I understand the culture. I switch between both very, very easily, thankfully. So I'm able to speak to both sides of the ocean. And I would often end my, and this is something Rabbi Sherman had mentioned at Sinai Temple a while back. I often would end my talks or my reels on my social media clips with an Am Yisrael Chai. You know, it's that kind of a cute thing. And everyone's like, oh yeah, that's right. Because everybody remembers when you were a kid singing Am Yisrael Chai. You know, everyone would get into it and it was like this chant. But it's so much more than that.
Yes.
And in order for it to be more than that, it has to be perpetuated. It can't just be stuck in the field of slogans, right? Some of the other slogans are like, you know, never again. How do you perpetuate never again? Because it looks like it's happening again, maybe to a certain extent. God willing, it shouldn't get to that point, right? So Am Yisrael Chai, I say, it can't just be a slogan. It's got to be a way of life. And what does that mean? And that means that you are actively pursuing being a part of Am Yisrael. Because Am Yisrael Chai, for those who don't know, Am Yisrael Chai is Long live Israel, right? Israel is alive. And the term really came out of the declarations that were made by people who survived the worst that humanity had to offer, the Jewish people. Despite all that we've been through, and study our history out there if you haven't, Am Yisrael Chai. We're still here. So Am Yisrael Chai, the slogan came in reaction to. So if it's, Columbia University and the protests taking place there, people are going to scream out, Am Yisrael Chai, we're still alive. But I argue it's still not enough. That Am Yisrael Chai has to be a way of life, not just a slogan we chant. So what does it mean? It means that we actively pursue engagement with Am Yisrael, with our people, with our community, with learning, with engaging. That means we do something every day, whether it's opening up a book, whether it's poetry, whether it's biblical stories that we read, whether it's rabbinic texts, whether it's modern day Israeli literature, whether it's actively pursuing being on a board of some sort of an organization that supports Am Yisrael, whether it's coming to visit. I always tell people, and for many, many years, I've been in this world of experiential learning in Israel. I'm the former CEO of Alexander Moss High School. I worked with Young Judea, all these different organizations. And I always say, before you leave Israel, make sure you have at least a tentative date, if not an actual ticket, for the next time you're coming. Make sure you put it on your calendar. I'm leaving now. You talk about walking down that ramp. We're all familiar with that. But I know, even though I'm leaving on this and this date, I'm thinking I'm coming back, right? So it's because this is the beating heart. This is the source. And that's why what you said, like even I did birth, I led birthright trips for 10 years. And now I have kids who don't speak any Hebrew, are Jewishly illiterate, but they know they're Jewish because their grandmother told them or something. And they'd say to me, I'm on this flight. I might as well be flying to the Bahamas or to Italy for a trip. But I'm coming to this place called Israel because whatever, it's free. My parents forced me. I'm coming on birthright. And I land at this place, which could be any country in the world. They're speaking a language I don't know. But I have these butterflies in my stomach. I'm feeling something. Can you tell me, Rabbi Lior, what does it mean? What am I feeling? And I say, it's a feeling of coming home. So, we can go through a curriculum of action items and activities that you can take on. But some of the things I just mentioned, volunteering, you have the summer off. You're a yoga instructor. Maybe you go work as a yoga instructor at a Jewish sleepaway camp, right? Right. So there's all of these things that we can do to be engaged with Am Yisrael, which empowers us, which empowers our brothers and sisters, our family. We're all family, and which perpetuates Am Yisrael Chai. The rifts that you talk about, sure they exist, but they also exist in my family too. I have an argument with my sibling about something, or with a parent, or with my wife, or with my son, or with someone who's a part of my family. And it can be surrounding the notion of politics or Jewish observance or whatever it is. But that's what we do as family. But that doesn't mean we hate each other. Still my family. I still welcome them. They're still my own flesh and blood, and we're part of the same framework and fabric of our existence. The same thing goes with Am Yisrael. So you're always going to have some of those, bad apples out there that might kind of make things worse than what they are. But I tune that out because I have to tell you, the majority of our brothers and sisters, the majority of Am Yisrael are doing what we're doing and want to be a part of what we are a part of and see the beauty and love of being a part of something special here in Israel and around the world. And that's why I always say what tore us apart in the past was baseless hatred, sinat chinam. We need to practice Ahavat chinam, love, baseless love, appreciation for the other, irrespective of our differences of opinions. Doesn't matter. We share a common denominator, and that's our existence and mission in this world.
Absolutely. And that's how a healthy family always is going to operate on unconditional love.
That's right.
So you touched upon the concept of tikkun olam. Let's shift gears a little bit here. For those who don't know, tikkun olam literally means healing the world. And in this like day and age of obsessive social justice, the Jewish concept of tikkun olam has reached, well, global proportions. I mean,
Right.
even the non-Jews are trying to tikkun the olam.
Right.
But the Jewish activist class has become obsessed with this goal of healing the world. Now, I'm not just talking post 10/7. This has always been, our lifeblood. And while it's certainly an unimpeachable in righteous virtue, it also comes with its own contradictions. Can the Jewish people really heal the entire world?
Can you know, it's a great question. I think it's the way we understand, and like I said earlier, it's about the lens through which we understand things. Can one person make a difference in the world? Of course. Did Martin Luther King Jr. make a difference? Did Theodor Herzl, who came up with this crazy, wacky idea, hey guys, I have an idea. Let's go home after 2,000 years of exile. People at the Congress in 1897 in Basel, Switzerland thought he was nuts. This is the first World Zionist Congress, right? We're now in our 39th, by the way, this year. The first World Zionist Congress in 1897 said, guys, I have an idea. Let's go home. People thought he was nuts. And here we are. So, yes, we can. And we already have. Anywhere you find innovation, charity, if you will, or tzedakah, which is the right term to give, volunteerism, the whole social welfare framework in the United States, was it Henrietta Szold, I think it was, who started it all, because it was immigrants who were coming to the United States and had no money or food to eat, and so they created this social welfare network, which then was expanded to be included into the United States, so you have social welfare. So yeah, of course we can do it. Look at our history. Look how far we've come. Look at the contributions we've made to humanity from every sphere, from theological to right to medicine to startup nation. How is it that in this country that is 60% desert, I'm pointing it out because my window's here, but 60% desert with no natural resources, we got no oil, we got no water. Somehow we're greening the desert. We're the number one exporter of wildflowers to the European continent. Every high-tech company in the world has their R&D offices in Israel, right? Google, Shmoogle, Intel, whatever you, Yahoo, they're all here, right?
Mostly
They're not anywhere.
Schmoogle.
Why are they here? Right? Why do people still nonetheless seek to do business here? How could it be that we're fighting a war of almost 2 years now with so much loss, with such a huge percentage of our workforce reserved, in the army? And yet we're able to still maintain Israel's economy and quality of life and day-to-day existence. So yes, we can do it. My challenge is that we need to be helping ourselves right now. So some of the things that I talk about today is, Tikkun Israel precedes Tikkun Olam. In Hebrew, it's Tikkun Israel kadma le'Tikkun Olam, meaning we have to heal. If we're going to heal the world and make it a better place, we got to make sure that we're ready to do that, that we're able to, and we're broken now. We're hurting. As much as we love to use words like being resilient and strong and unified, which is all true, we're also emotionally fatigued. We're also in TSD, not PTSD. We're in TSD. We're also up against a tidal wave of Jew hatred that the Western world hasn't seen since World War II. And we don't know how to tackle that. And we're trying to figure that out. So we have a lot of fixing and healing to do within ourselves. And I think that's most important right now. I always use the metaphor, the story of when you get on a flight and the stewardess gives the instructions, and if you're traveling with someone, should the oxygen pressure in the cabin fall and the masks fall down, and you're traveling with someone who needs help to put the mask on, who do you put a mask on first? You or the person sitting next to you? Who?
That's right. Of course, you gotta save yourself first,
If you can't breathe, you can't help someone else breathe.
that's right.
So Tikkun Olam is wonderful. It's not the time right now. Right now it's Tikkun Yisrael. We got to heal ourselves, all of us. We got to circle the wagons for a moment. It's okay. We're entitled to it, just like every other community does. Just like every other community worries about itself when they're under attack. We have to also worry about ourselves right now. And that means circling the wagons. That means reconnecting, re-engaging with one another across political lines, across denominational lines. Who cares, right? It's re-educating ourselves. It's being Jewishly literate. It's knowing our history. Because even for those who are furthest away from the epicenter of Jewish life, they know that they're a part of something. They just don't know what it means, or they don't know how to act it out, or they don't know what Am Yisrael means, or what it means to perpetuate Am Yisrael Chai, like we just talked about. And that's the time. This is a historical intersection we are witnessing of what I said earlier, and many people say, is a renaissance. It's a revolution. Call it a Jewish renaissance, call it a Zionist resolution, reclaiming our identity. Other people use these terms for their betterment, saying that we're racist. This is our identity we're allowing other people to define. So this is the moment for us to heal ourselves, healing Israel, Tikkun Yisrael.
Absolutely. So typically, these conversations I have on this podcast are, as I was talking to you before the show, very, very heavy. And I have to, at some point, pivot it to lightness. And I feel like, sadly, I'm going to have to pivot this to darkness for just one moment.
Okay.
I want to ask a question just in the face of the realities that we're facing today. And then we'll get back to the good stuff. Tzedakah, which is charity, and mitzvot, which are really commandments, but we call good deeds, which is always an interesting use of terms that everybody thinks of a mitzvah as a good deed, but we as Jews are commanded to do these deeds, are deeply ingrained in our Jewish values, of course, and have always been the foundation of our community. But in this sort of, not sort of, okay, I'll say sort of, post-religious society, I'm not talking about Judaism, I'm talking about the world now, that's teeming with anti-Israel, anti-Zionist, and anti-Semitic actual terrorist supporters. There's a very sick and inverted narrative of Jews being presented as the epitome of all evils. And in that narrative, the very concept of Tikkun Olam, it falls flat on its face against their loud and vicious rhetoric because they just laugh at it. Like, really? You're committing genocide. You're going to say that you're Tikkun Olam? So I'm just wondering, like, is this slogan one that needs to, at least for the time being, be extracted from our public discourse?
Which slogan? Just remind me.
A Tikkun Olam. I mean,
Oh.
when we go around singing it and dancing it and posting
Yeah.
it, and the world is, like genocidal baby killer,
Yeah.
it becomes a mockery of ourselves.
Sure. I also think that it's a watered down version of our true mission in this world. I think that it feeds into the narrative I was saying earlier in our talk about particular versus universal. So it's the universal. It's our deep desire to be accepted, because throughout history we haven't. Sure, there were
Well, I'm
times.
sorry. Can I just ask really quickly? You're not implying that Jews do good deeds in order to be accepted.
I think that it has, there's a component to it. I do.
You
I
don't
think
think it's a
that,
function of Jewish values?
well, there's good deeds and there's tikkun olam. I mean, good deeds can, good deeds might perpetuate tikkun olam, but it's the focus on doing the good deeds versus just healing the world and just showing the world, hey, look, we're the Jews and we're trying to help, everyone. It's that messaging versus just doing good deeds, because that's what we do. Why do I have to ride on the coattails of making sure that, and I am suggesting, and I've seen this and I've heard this in other places, that Tikkun Olam has taken on a form that has a lot to do with the Jewish presence in foreign countries and our desire to be accepted, to say, look, we're trying to make the world a better place. Now, good deeds are, everyone should be a good deed. In Pirkei Avot, it says, where there is no human beings, be a human being, right? Reading now Pirkei Avot in the period of the Omer between Passover and Shavuot. It says, in front of the elderly, rise, get out of your, you're on the bus, there's an elderly person that comes in, give them your seat, hold the door open. Giving tzedakah is a lot more than giving charity, because the essence of tzedakah is tzedek, right? It's justice. So all of these things sit right there. It's, you know, doing gmilut chasadim, which is, you know, acts of righteousness and goodness and volunteering. And ultimately, that makes the world a better place. But my focus isn't on working, making the world a place. It's very simple. It's in the particular. It's being a good human being.
Yeah.
It's doing good deeds. It's doing acts of kindness. So I do believe that the term, and I do believe that less and less Jews. I listened to what's his name, famous Reform rabbi. Oh, just escaped my. I was talking about him yesterday. Reform rabbi in New York City. His name shall come back to me. Gave a wonderful Dvar Torah at his shul, Temple Emmanuel in New York City.
Yeah.
And he said, guys, we lost it. We've been fighting for Tikkun Olam and trying to prove our worth and our loyalty to these host societies we live in, but we lost sight of who we are as Jews. That it starts with us. I'm number one. Ve'ahavta le'reacha kamocha, you should love the other as yourself. First, you have to love yourself. It can't just be about the other. So that's vital. So I think Tikkun Olam has lost its meaning. It's kind of been watered down to something else or another. And I'm seeing it today where, you know, people who perpetuate Tikkun Olam, they themselves don't even know the basis of what it means to be Jewish. They're Jewishly illiterate. They don't know their own history. And so all of that precedes Tikkun Olam is what leads to Tikkun Olam, but you have to know that. So acts of kindness, doing good deeds, that's the aleph bet. That's who we are as it is. I don't need to have this whole movement of making the world a better place. We're our presence in this world is as part of that. I hope that makes sense.
It does make sense. I have to be honest, what's not landing well with me is this concept of doing this in order to be accepted, because I could tell you again, like I again, going to a Chabad school, believe me, that you know, but not everyone knows. That's as Jewish as it gets. I mean, Jewish, you know, like, and when you put your money in the tzedakah box every single morning, it was ingrained in us that even if it's a penny, our job as a Jew is to always, every day, be giving. There was never any sort of messaging of people will like you more when you do this. It was Jewish values say that our job is to raise the other, be it Jewish or not Jewish. From what I
Correct.
understand in the Torah, it actually does say first you take care of the Jewish neighbor, then you go broader. I could accept that.
Right. Right.
But I don't know if you meant it the way you said it. I don't feel like Jews are philanthropic on the aggregate in order to be somehow accepted by the world around us. And by the way, if that is the goal, it's not working.
Which is why we need to go back to the particular, to Tikkun Israel. You know, I think it's out of the, I forget what it was, billions of dollars in charity or tzedakah that American Jewry gives, only 11% goes to Jewish causes. That raises the alarm bell for me and lots of questions. Why is it so expensive to be Jewish in America? Why can't every Jewish kid get a Jewish education? Why can't every Jewish person live in a Jewish community? Why does kosher meat cost more than regular meat? It's very expensive to be a Jew. And I wonder about that as I think about American Jewry as being the wealthiest, most influential community of Jews in our history. Okay, we have the most power, the most influence, the most money, as opposed to any other Jewish community in our history. You can study that. And so I think about that, and I come to the conclusion that my sense, and again, I look also at history and the Jewish experience throughout history, where, you know, people decide, you know, in the days of the Maccabees, you know, and the period of the Greeks ruling over Jerusalem, where many Israelites decided not to circumcise their sons so that, you know, they might seem like or be like the non-Israelites, if you will. We've come a long way to make efforts to be accepted by others. And what I've heard in sermons that have been delivered, in talks that have been given, and actions that have been taken is that for many, they're, you know, the same reason why you have today Jews that are still protesting against Israel, even given wearing a prayer shawl, claiming that they are religious or maybe even rabbis, and saying and still fighting for you know, supporting Hamas's actions against the Jews. And I have to wonder about that, and why do they have, what is their end goal there? Is it really that they really believe this, or is it something else? With Tikkun Olam, I think that it has taken on something that is kind of veered off what it was. When you went to your Chabad and you put, you know, a penny in there, you never, I imagine you might have never heard the word Tikkun Olam there.
No. But keep in mind, I'm 53. I don't think that Tikkun Olam was the slogan. And by the way, I believe that Tikkun Olam was coined by the Reform Movement.
Correct.
And I don't believe it was in the 70s and 80s.
I don't know when exactly, but it is the Reform Movement that took it on as their, and this rabbi, gosh, I have to remember his name, from Temple Emmanuel in New York City.
It's driving me crazy because he's actually from
Sinai.
He
said, we've relinquished the Jewish language of expression, meaning Hebrew. We've relinquished Jewish observance. We've relinquished our allegiance and support of Israel on a political and every level. And we've put all of our bags into this one basket called Tikkun Olam. And the way he explained it was that we've really watered down our relationship with our identity as a result of which.
Yeah.
So those kinds of things that you hear that are going on out there, just, and it could be from a very, you know, genuine place, of course, because it's wonderful to think I want to make the world better. Of course we do.
Yeah.
But going along those lines, many, I think, have lost their way and kind of, you know, their own connection to their, to who they are as people in this world, as Jews.
That's right. That's right. And I just want to just say as a side note that in the goal of self-preservation, which is what it sounds like you're getting at, I think that the self-preservation Jews are the ones who are standing with Hamas, not the ones who are giving charity. That's how I see it. But turning on them, on their own people in order to survive because it's in our blood. This is historical generational trauma, whether it's conscious or unconscious or subconscious or any level of conscious.
It's also popular opinion. It's popular opinion. It's mob mentality. Everyone's doing it, you know?
Sure. I'm just saying like when it comes to self-preservation, I don't see our tzedakah for the most part being a function of self-preservation so much as turning away from us has been a sad outpouring of that Darwinian instinct. So back to the happy and uplifting. Another prominent Jewish value we have, of course, is the value of family, right? Oh, it's all about the mishpacha. As we say, our traditions and our faith, our memories and our wisdom are passed down l'dor v'dor, right? From generation to generation. So what questions, Rabbi Sinai, do you feel we have to be asking ourselves about our personal role in Am Yisrael?
Yeah. You know, I use often the you know, the paragraph following the mission statement of Am Yisrael, the Shema, right? Shema Yisrael, we say it in the morning and at night. There's the paragraph that comes after that. And a few sentences in, it goes, Vishinanta Navanecha Vidibarta Bam, Vishiftacha Vivitecha, Uvlechtcha Bader, Vishokcha Uvkumecha. And you should teach your children and you should speak to them. Vishiftacha Vivitecha, when you're sitting at home, when you're walking on the way, when you're lying down, and when you arise. And essentially that's role model. It's being role models. Perpetuating from generation to generation is role modeling. When I have people come up to me, so often older people or grandparents, say, how come my grandkids, you know, don't care? And I say, well, I don't know. How could they not? Because again, I think about our story and our people, and I'm in love with our people and our story, and I think it's amazing. And I say, well, what are you doing to perpetuate that for them? Are you role modeling it? Do you do Friday night kiddush? Oh, no, we don't do that. Have you visited Israel? I was there, but my grandkids now 13, 14, they haven't been there yet. So why should they care? How should they be related? Everything we do, my kids, I didn't grow up religious, unlike you went to Chabad. I did not grow religious. And I took this on in my early 20s, in my young adulthood. I was always very spiritual. I always sought to be connected. I always knew there was something much larger than me going on. I remember, I don't know if I mentioned, my grandparents who were survivors of the Shoah, they came out as I was growing up. They would tell me there is no God. They didn't believe it. And they grew up in religious households in Poland. But they would tell me there's no God. How could there be a God? So I would hear that from them. But in my kishke, I always knew there was something going on. There was something much bigger than me taking place. And I wanted to connect to it. And so I took this level of observance on later in my life. I went to rabbinical school, Shabbat, etc. My kids, for example, who, by the way, don't go to a religious school here in Israel. I send them to a regular Mamnachti public school because I don't like the Jewish education that they get here in Israel, dafka, in the religious school. But everything they know and do is as a result of the education that they witnessed and experienced at home, because education starts at home. So the Dor v'Dor has everything to do with role modeling, with showing. You can't just tell people, you got to show them. And
Right.
kids are like sponges. They are sponges. They learn everything from their parents and from their surroundings, how to act, how not to act, to be anxious, to be angry, to be happy. The way of life you choose, whether it's community. Shabbat morning, there's no Saturday morning cartoons. We wake up, we have coffee, they have hot chocolate, and we go to shul, and we're with friends, and we have a kiddush, and we have lunch together, we go for a picnic. Le Dor V'Dor means the handoff has to take place. It actually has to take place. Same thing in a marathon. You can't have just a marathon with no one running. You're running in that journey and you're making the handoff. You're handing off the baton to the person that's ahead of you. So you got to make that handoff. You got to role model these values and these experiences if you want your kids and your grandkids to as well.
Yeah, and I've heard you say just so succinctly, like, what kind of ancestors will we be?
That's right. That's right. That's something that we each and every one of us need to be thinking about and asking ourselves, what is, it can be also called legacy. What's your legacy? But legacy is too egocentric. I think what kind of an ancestor are you going to be is the appropriate question. Because in the future they're going to be talking the same way I just talked about my grandparents. I even think about my great grandparents and others that I haven't met before, but I've only heard stories or seen a picture of a great great grandparents or something else or another. And I wonder what they were thinking. And I'm looking at back and their experiences, and I'm here I am, I'm their future, right? And so what are our future? What are they going to say? What is Am Yisrael in 150 years from now, 50 years from now? What are they going to say about this state, about the people, about Jews all over the world? We have an opportunity to be an active participant in what that's going to look like in deciding based on our actions, right? Based on perpetuating Am Yisrael Chai.
Yeah. Okay. So I have to ask you a rabbi question or two,
Okay.
as you are a rabbi. First question, what would you say is the most important prayer right now? Is it like Mishaberach? Is it Shema? Is it something else? What if somebody who is not super connected and just wants to do that one thing a day, one prayer, what would you tell them every day? Read this. And I mean specifically for, I'm sorry, I mean specifically for this moment in time, just not in general,
Yeah.
including the hostages, including the soldiers, the reservists, the nation, the trauma, the
Right.
everything, all the things.
Right. That's a great question. So I'm just typing something here so I don't forget. There's the if we would have the opportunity to decide on a new national anthem, it would be this prayer that I'm going to say. It's Achenu kol, there's a song now, a lot of people are singing it. Achenu kol beit Yisrael, right? We are brothers and sisters, all of the house of Israel. Hanetunim betzara, people who are in places of darkness, people who are in places of suffering, right? That we should uplift each other, that we should bring ourselves from out of the darkness and into the light. This is the prayer that now has become a song that everyone sings. It used to be only in the religious communities, but we end all of our Kabbalat Shabbat now at Hasid Square with this song, which is a prayer, which is praying for the other, right? We are all brothers and sisters, all of the house of Israel. And I think it is indicative and reflective of the place that we are in today as a people, the unifying force, the baseless love and care that we have for each other. When I'm watching about what's happening in the United States or in LA, or if God forbid there is attack or a swastika is found here, I'm thinking about my brothers and sisters out there and what they're going through and what I can do to uplift them out of this, because it could be a dark place and scary space. And the same thing for all of my brothers and sisters around the world. When you're hearing about what happens here and there's a siren that goes off, and you might think, wow, you know, I know Lior Sinai, he's in Tel Aviv, and there's rockets going off in Tel Aviv or sirens, to know that I know that you're thinking of me and want to help me get out of the dark space that we are in into the light. So that's a blessing. And if you want, I can find it for you in
Yes.
English.
Please, if you could send me, is it called Achenu Kol Beit Yisrael? Is that the, okay. I'd like to put it in the show notes. I'll put it in Hebrew and in English, but if you have it available, I won't have to search for it.
Okay, great.
Okay. And okay. So one more rabbi question. Torah
Yes.
portion. What Torah portion would you say best defines this moment in time? It could be a story that reflects this moment or that is inspirational for where we should be looking.
So we read a couple of weeks ago about the building of the Mishkan, of the sanctuary. And it goes, V'banuli Mishkan v'shachanti betocham, right? That we should be building this sanctuary, right? And then God says, and I will dwell within them. Again, using the plural versus the singular. So it's not that God will dwell in the sanctuary, the singular, but with them, among all of us. And I think that's it's important to be able to understand that we're a part of something much greater than ourselves. And even in the darkest of hours and the most challenging of times, that there's a unifying force out there. And call it again, call it the universe, call it, you know, nature, call it God. But there's something that's happening. And if we peel away the distractions, whether it's our cell phones that are right in front of our face, or preconceived notions about certain things, and open ourselves up and be consciously present in our day-to-day and in our interactions with people, I think that's the space where we find that there is this unifying force, that there's just something that's much larger than us that dwells among us all.
Do you know what passage that is?
I'll send it to you in the show notes too.
Okay. Terrific. Okay. I will put both of those in the Torah passage, passage and the prayer for people to integrate into their daily lives and thoughts for the nation of Israel. So let's finish off with the most important slogan of them all. Hatikva, the hope.
Atikva.
The hope. Where do you see the hope for Am Yisrael as we look into the future?
So my so my so so can I read something real quick?
100%.
Okay, so this is a quote that I like to read. It's right here. Okay, it's called The Anchors of Hope. And I'm gonna read it to you. And it goes like this. And hope can be seen as a kind of anchor, which is thrown out of a suffocated and desperate existence towards a better and freer future, towards a reality that does not yet exist, most of which is made of the heart's wishes. From imagination, the anchor is thrown and clings to the ground of the future. The individual and sometimes an entire society begin to pull themselves towards it. It is an optimistic act, the ability to throw the imaginary anchor beyond the tangible and arbitrary circumstances indicates that in the soul of the person who dares to hope, there is still one place that is free, a place where no one was able to suppress it nor pollute it. And so my anchor of hope is our people, is the people that I meet every day, is the people who are actively perpetuating what Am Yisrael Chai means, people who are actively engaged in acts of kindness and spreading light and thinking twice about the words they use and wanting to really create atmospheres and environments of unity and coming together, because we have been suffering. We have seen darkness. We've seen hell. And we said, no, we choose life. To be or not to be, we chose to be. And so my hope, my anchor of hope, is in all of us, is in all of our people out there doing good things, and that we should continue to, and God willing, pull ourselves, as the quote says, towards that future, which is going to be better for us all, and by extension, for the world too.
God willing. Thank you so much, Rabbi Sinai. What an uplifting conversation this has been. And I thank you so much for your time, and wish you a almost Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you.
From Los Angeles.
And thank you for all you do, and to all of your viewers out there. God bless you. Love and light from Israel. And please come visit. And if you do, look me up, and I'm happy to meet you for a coffee or whatever it might be.
Awesome. Well, when I'm there in August, my sister lives very close to you. We will definitely awesome. Meet up for coffee. So
wonderful.
As they say in the old country, Am Yisrael Chai.
Am Yisrael Chai.